Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey, everybody. This is a preview of today's members episode. If you want to hear the whole thing, head on over to theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button, and become a member today.
Merkle Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave, and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. But the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand, and he's running really fast, and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reached my hand into this bush and I touch air. Couldn't breathe and I couldn't move because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to the Confessionals Podcast. I'm your host, Tony Merkle. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's contact@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me, just get a hold of me. Go ahead and check out merkmerch.com for all your Merkle Media apparel needs. T-shirts, hoodies, hats, more designs coming soon at merkmerch.com. Also check out merklefilms.com for your on-demand streaming needs. We got the documentaries up there that I have done, and we also have documentaries by other producers up there, and a very big production company coming to that platform very soon. Now today we have Dr. Simeon Hine coming onto the show to talk about the idea that creatures like Bigfoot might be cloaking themselves by shifting frequencies existing just outside our normal perception. We got into remote viewing, scientific bias, and how most of us are trapped in a narrow slice of reality without even knowing it. Let's get to Dr. Simeon Hine right now. All right, today we have Dr. Simeon Hine on the show. How are you, sir?
Hey, Tony. How's it going today? Thanks for having me here.
It's going good. I'm glad you're here. And you are an interesting fella. So you come from what I understand, you come from the university academic background, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah. Tony, I did the whole thing. I was from kindergarten to graduate school, PhD in 27 continuous years of school. I did it. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but it's a long time to be in school. It teaches you a certain view of the world. And I learned after getting my PhD, there was more going on that no one tells us about in school, or it's made fun of, right? Yeah. And that got me going into a lot of different interesting subjects that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk about that for a second here. So you're pursuing academics, and you know, I applaud you because I couldn't make it out of 4 years of college. Like, I was just like, I can't do this. I'm out. And as somebody who has been involved in the academic side of this for so long, what was your aha moment that, like, you were like, there's more to what I've, that there's more to this reality than what I've been told, and I need to dive into that?
Well, the seeds of it were planted in graduate school. I studied something called fractal geometry and chaos theory way back in the late 80s, 90s, before it really became popular. And there was nobody in sociology looking at these sort of mathematical types of analysis. Everything was based on linear regression, linear statistics and linear regression, which tries to make everything fit and average. Tries to make everything be kind of normalized, right? Mm. And even back then, during my graduate school days, I felt like something was wrong with that, because it was like putting the horse before the cart. You were kind of saying, okay, we have these math models that are easy to understand, so we're just going to fit all reality into this bell curve model. And immediately something in my mind said, well, what about phenomena that don't fit in the center of the bell curve? Rare events. It was just a gut feeling. And so I looked into fractal geometry, you know, the shapes of nature, trees and mountains and clouds, things that are, have patterns, but they're irregular too at the same time. And they don't act like normal, a kind of Euclidean straight line objects. And there were these techniques for studying objects between dimensions. Now, back then, that did not mean anything paranormal to me or anything like that. It was just the idea that there could be phenomena that are between one and two dimensions, or between two dimensions, like a tabletop, and three dimensions. And you could get this thing called a fractal dimension to measure how edgy something is, right? How irregular it is, which to me just seemed really interesting. It was the opposite of trying to fit everything into lines and boxes. It's, let's look at the phenomena that we all work with every day that don't fit into lines and boxes. At the time, Tony, it was things like telephone line noise. That's how fractals got started, Benoit Mandelbrot. Things that have this repetitive behavior but are essentially unpredictable at any particular moment, but you can see a larger pattern. And fractals ended up being used very practically in JPEG technology to compress data, right? So instead of looking at every single point, you could just create an algorithm and sample a couple points. And that became the basis, even back in the 90s, of being able to have very efficient transmission of graphics images without transmitting all the data, because the fractal algorithm could kind of look at the overall patterns. And then it became used in satellite compression. So fractals ended up having a very practical application in the technology that we use every day. But for me, I was interested in things that didn't fit the traditional patterns that social science wanted to look at. Basically, only looking at phenomena that were easy to understand. To me, it seemed like a type of bias that was built into my, and I'm a statistics, former statistics teacher. I wasn't comfortable with it. And I asked other sociologists, why are we using these linear methods when it's not clear that everything is linear or even has averages or standard deviations? You know, these kind of normalized mathematical concepts that we use to understand the world. And the response I got, Tony, was it's easy to teach and understand.
Wow.
So that set off a lot of alarm bells. That there was a bias built into science, right?
Yeah.
That's excluding phenomena that are rare. Wow. It was like you were kind of almost building in a catastrophe waiting to happen in society by continuously pushing everything into a Gaussian distribution, you know, bell curve, normal distribution. I wasn't convinced reality was that normal. It may have been because I had a UFO sighting with my mom at age 12 or 13 in the Everglades, where we both saw something. We had binoculars. I at first thought it was the moon, but but the moon happened to be on the horizon.
So it's definitely not that.
Yeah. So she said, that's not the moon. The moon's over there. We both looked. She said, Tim, it's a UFO. And there was, it was amorphous, but there was solid structure underneath. And we had 10 times powerful binoculars. She was a serious Audubon bird watcher. So we could see the underside of this craft. And then it went from a completely stationary position to rapidly going into a cloud. And at the ranger talk that night, as they have in national parks, the ranger, she raised her hand and wanted to talk about it when the ranger asked for stories of the day. Anyone see anything interesting? The ranger did not want to go there. And so this is, I'm like 11 or 12, Tony. And I never had any other sightings again from that point on. I mean, until more recently when I got interested in these topics. But it I think that's what started it, is I always wondered what that was. I had seen as a teenager a government official try to tell us that it was swamp gas or something uneventful. And so when I came across these statistical techniques in sociology, I just immediately felt suspicious, even being a statistics teacher. So I looked for alternatives. And when I finally came across the topic of remote viewing in 1996, just accidentally hearing about it, this little bell went off in my head and said, maybe that's the type of phenomena that science hasn't been looking at because it's sort of at the edge of the bell curve. So I was sort of open to the idea there could be phenomena out there that science had completely missed. I didn't know what they were. But when I heard someone talking about remote viewing on the community radio station here in Boulder one day, then I thought that could be the type of process that's not as easy to understand. It's real, but it doesn't fit the conventional mathematical techniques we look at to try to see if something's real or not. So I should take a look at it. And that's my long-winded answer to your question, how I got involved. It started from remote viewing.
It's very interesting. And you're at the right place for long-windedness. Podcast, that's where we thrive. We're long-winded. Sure. So I met a remote viewer in Utah speaking at an event. And are you familiar with a guy named, I have his card here, Paul Smith?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, Paul was one of the people that worked in the government program.
Yeah.
That started in 72, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. I reached out to him recently. I haven't heard back, but I'm hoping to get him on the show at some point to talk about some of the newest revelations. But I'm curious to some of your thoughts on some of the things that they came out with. That was, I think it was about 2-3 weeks ago now, maybe 4 weeks ago, the whole, the remote viewing back in the 80s. I don't know if you heard about them. And so theoretically locating the Ark of the Covenant, and these documents were brought out like, I think it was in the early 2000s, and they're just now starting to kind of make waves and stuff. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have any?
Yeah, I mean, RV can be used for things like that. It can locate things very accurately. There are cases in our own history of our own military RV program where planes were located, people were located, really specific locations were given to the agencies that were locating people, objects, planes, and they were there. So it can be used for that in that way, and it does work that way sometimes very well. I'm not sure about this particular case about the Ark of the Covenant, but, Tony, RVers are always interested in using these skills to try to locate rare objects, historically important objects that we've lost the locations of. So it could be used for something like that. In this particular case, I don't know enough about it if it's actually succeeded, but it wouldn't surprise me in the long run if those sorts of things are discovered, because RV potentially it can work very well and very accurately. And the people in the government remote viewing program, like Paul that you mentioned a few minutes ago, participated in projects like that. And it's been through FOIA requests, those projects have been made public. Mm. And we can see what they found. And in some cases, it's extremely accurate.
It's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting in my book. So when you were talking about the idea of dimensions and, maybe could you go into how you view dimensions? Because like from somebody who doesn't come from an analytical mindset, I look at like dimensions maybe a little differently than you do, because I look at it as like it's like like beyond a veil, there's things operating and maneuvering at their own will. Is that how you see this phenomena between one and two dimensions, or is it more, I don't know, mathematical for you?
I would say it's a little of both, because there is a mathematical interpretation of other dimensions. We could call them parallel realities. And that has, believe it or not, folks, this is not metaphysics. It has its basis all the way back in Hugh Everett III at Princeton, a physics graduate student in Princeton, who looked into this idea that quantum mechanics predicts that there should be other dimensions based on the wave equation, the famous Schrodinger wave equation, which is one of the bases of quantum mechanics. And he suggested that these other descriptions based on the wave function that we don't perceive, since the wave function describes a lot of possibilities for any atomic structure, and we only perceive, you know, a fraction of those at any one time. He suggested, he called them relative states, that there are other relative states that we're not perceiving, but they exist. And Hugh Everett's interpretation of this, and this is something I've studied a lot, because this is one way to look at dimensions, is the Hugh Everett relative states parallel realities model. It's not the only way, because dimensions can be different aspects of our own physical reality. You know, from a point to a surface to a cube is 1 to 2 to 3 dimensions. But Hugh Everett suggested that there are like literally almost infinite numbers of dimensions beyond, you know, the usual ones that we're used to. Of course, Einstein talked about the usual physical dimensions we have plus time. So he added the idea of time being the fourth dimension. Other physicists at the time were looking at this. So there's different ways to look at it. You can even look at it also like different frequencies. Like just think of a radio. Let me give you a simple way to think about it. Radio band analogy. You know, we know that there are different radio bands. As you know, when you and I were younger, there was more reliance on AM and FM. As a kid, I played with shortwave radio.
Yeah.
So I was aware of shortwave radio bands. Now, these all exist simultaneously, but you'd only, like, if you're just listening to your one radio station, like in New York where I grew up, it was like WPIX or something like that. It was like a certain type of rock music. Now, you listen to that station a lot, but you know the other stations exist on the bandwidth, right? But even if you're not listening to them, you consciously are aware you could tune to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way to think of dimensions. It's frequencies that you're not experiencing or picking up, but it doesn't mean there isn't energy and information being exchanged on those frequencies. Even life forms existing on those frequencies. So using the radio analogy, we can sort of just intellectually accept the idea that there's reality that we're not perceiving right now, literally, that we would agree exists in the air space around us from different radio stations and every cell phone, you know, that's around you within 100 miles. You're picking up some of that radiation. Your body's picking up a tiny little bit of it, even if you're not consciously aware of it. And by the way, in remote viewing, we use that same kind of analogy to describe how you can pick up information that your conscious mind isn't aware of. It's just that there are radio signals that exist in your airspace that you're not picking up right now. Well, it's the same idea with realities, is there could be other realities that are operating at a different frequency that are in the same space you're in, or I'm in right now, that you're not physically perceiving. And I mean, just one example of that, which we know is scientifically true, there's no controversy about this, Tony, is solar neutrinos. Solar neutrinos are coming out of the sun, trillions and trillions and hundreds of trillions a second. And there's so many of them, and they're so small that they pass through our body every second. What I've read, I can't prove this, but what I read in ordinary science journals and magazines is that billions go through your hand every second, but they're so small, they never interact with your body. They're, you know, they're millions of times smaller than an atom. And only once in a while would any of them ever collide with us. Maybe like once out of 10 years in light years, in a solar neutrino is going to hit something in lead. one neutrino would have to travel in lead for 10 years to actually collide with something. So that's how small they are. So that's sort of an idea of another reality around us all the time. Maybe it doesn't matter to us very much, that particular type of solar neutrino, but it just shows us that there's an invisible world around us.
This was a preview of today's member episode. If you want to hear the whole thing, head on over to theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button, and become a member today.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com. Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.